The content of this podcast should not be considered financial or investment advice. All interviews and discussions are opinions only, and the podcast has been created without taking into consideration the listener's financial objectives, financial situation, or needs. Listeners should obtain independent advice before making any financial decisions. Hi, this is Barry Fitzgerald, Garen Perreault columnist for Stockhead. Welcome to another edition of the Explorers podcast. As we all know, iron ore prices have gone ballistic. They were last quoted at an all-time record of more than US$200 a tonne, thanks to the seemingly insatiable demand from China at a time when shipments from Brazil, Australia's biggest competitor in the seaborne market for the key steelmaking raw material, continues to struggle from the impact of COVID and the need for the country to get on top of deadly issues around its tailings dams. So it's never been a better time to be an Aussie iron ore producer. The trouble for the average investor, though, is that you can buy BHP, Rio or Fortescue for iron ore exposure if you want, but if it is amped up leverage exposure to the iron ore thematic that you want, there is more joy to be had in the junior space. Now, iron ore prices have, of course, defied skeptics. And now that they're more than $200 a tonne, it's given a real boost to a bunch of juniors that have either got into production or are planned to. At more than $200 a tonne, even a small operation can be massively profitable. It is into that space that today's podcast delves with Juno Minerals. The WA iron ore specialist recently demerged from Jupiter Mines in a $20 million IPO and in-specie distribution of shares at 25 cents each. It will have a market cap at the issue price on debut of $50 million. Juno comes to the market as an independent company sporting ownership of the Mount Mason DSO or Hematite Iron Ore Project and the Mount Ida Magnetite Project, both in the central Yilgarn region to the northwest of Kalgoorlie. The projects have had the benefit of more than $50 million being spent on advancing them during the mining boom when iron ore got to more than US $190 a tonne. They were parked up when iron ore fell away, but are well and truly back in town now that iron ore has taken off again. They are also very different projects in themselves. The first one has near-term production potential, while there's a much larger scale production potential emerging out of the magnetite project. Now, we've got Juno's Managing Director, Greg Durack, with us today to fill us in on that story. Hi, Greg. Welcome to the podcast, and thanks for your time today.
Yeah, thanks for the introduction, Barry, and welcome to your listeners to listen to Juno Minerals' story. So it's a very exciting time in the iron ore space, and for me, this is unfinished business to get these projects going.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, you're obviously well known in the industry, but for those who don't know you well, tell us a bit about your professional background and what has led to Jupiter demerging Juno.
Yep. So I've been in the mining industry, 38, or probably just a little bit longer than 38 years now, sort of chemist, metallurgist by profession. I've worked in small companies and large companies. I've worked overseas a couple of occasions in PNG in my early days and in later days over in Greece with Normandy Mining. I was in Normandy Mining for 12 years, worked my way up through there and ended up running a couple of gold mines with them. Mm-hmm. After I finished there, I came back to Australia and worked as a managing director in a small junior company looking at developing the Deflector Gold Copper Project, and also held a number of executive director roles in junior companies. So I've had a pretty wide range of experience. Most recently, probably the last 5 years, I was involved with Pilbara Minerals as a study manager, joined there in 2015, did the DFS and responsible for the metallurgy and process design for the Pilgangoora project. So that's gone very well. So in the last year, I've just been consulting to Pilbara and sort of finished up end of January this year. So these Central Yilgarn Iron Projects, I've been involved with them before. I was the CEO of Jupiter Mines back from late 2006 to 2013. And we, as you said, Barry, we spent $50 million on advancing these projects, did over 100 kilometres of drilling, and we got Mount Mason into, being fully permitted by the end of 2013. So, but unfortunately, the iron ore price dropped and those two projects were parked up.
Right.
Yeah.
So now they come back, as you say, unfinished business for you.
Yeah, definitely. So I was thinking about the Mount Mason project actually middle of last year, and I was almost going to send Priyank a text and said you should get this Mount Mason project, again, Priyank being the CEO of Jupiter Mines. But just so happens to be I was contacted in August last year and by Jupiter and seeing whether I wanted to throw my hat in the ring as the MD and CEO's role. And I said, well, that's a fantastic opportunity, and I sort of grabbed it with both hands. So as I said, Barry, I mean, the iron ore prices are good. Mount Mason's a little DSO project, 6 million tonnes at 60% iron. So, but a great opportunity and great timing, really. Been very busy.
Okay, Greg, Mount Mason, an interesting project in itself. Hematite, so a nice grade there, 60% plus. Direct shipping. I was just wondering, are you able at this stage to give us a feel for how quickly it might be brought into production?
Well, yeah. So in the background, Barry, we've been working very hard. I mean, I've had a couple of project guys on giving me a hand the last 5 months. We've gone out expressions of interest for contracting packages. So a different strategy this time around. We're looking at purely a contracting strategy, contract mining, crushing, haulage, village expansion. I think we've got a stretch target. We think we can get this project into operation by Q4 this year. I mean, that is a stretch target, but certainly I think Q1 next year. So we've been very busy behind the scenes, and all the project tenders are going out in the next four to six weeks. So it's been a lot of work that's been happening parallel during the demerger and IPO process.
Yeah. And again, are you able at this stage to say what sort of production scale you might be looking at?
Well, we've got 500,000 tonnes right at surface, strip ratio of 1:1, and then we'll move down to main zone. But looking at, kicking off at 500,000 and then ramping it up to 1 million tonnes, as soon as we can. So as soon as the logistics will support those sort of production rates. So, that's what we're targeting.
Okay. Now, one of the benefits, as I see it, is you're not out way out in the eastern Pilbara there. What is your infrastructure solution?
Well, the infrastructure we're looking, and we're sort of in discussions with a major logistics supplier at the moment. So we're looking at hauling it to a rail siding onto the south of Menzies, and then the existing rail siding, and then looking at hauling down to the Port of Esperance.
So no need to build a railway or a port?
No need to build a railway or a port. So
now we've heard a lot recently about there being difficulties in projects securing specialised personnel to get projects up and running. What's your read on all that?
Yeah, I think that is a major challenge, particularly I think for some major, for the mining industry in general, actually. So look, we'll be a small, lean, mean operation. I'm a hands-on type person. But I think we'll be able to attract the right sort of people into our operation, being a small operation, small team. So they sort of attract a certain kind of person who want to, be involved.
Don't want to get lost in their bureaucracy.
Get lost. But certainly for the, I think, in the contracting space, certainly, road train drivers, are highly sought after these days. So it's certainly going to be a challenge, not only for us, but certainly the whole mining industry at the currently. But I think we'll find a way.
Okay. Now, the 6 million tonnes is a great start, but I was just wondering, is there an exploration upside there at all?
There is exploration upside. We didn't really do a lot of exploration for DSO, when I was involved with Jupiter previously, but certainly a major objective is to get in production as quickly as we can. That is going to be our sole focus. And once, you know, we've got cash coming in, we'll start doing some exploration on our tenements for further DSO. So, you know, we've got quite a fair bit of a land package there covering, you know, Mount Ida, the magnetite project, and, of course, Mount Mason. So, you know, there's quite a reasonable size biff range we can do some more focused exploration on, for sure.
Get on to Mount Ida in a moment, but I was just wondering, how do you go through the, you know, the internal planning process? You know, I presume you're not plugging in $210 iron ore to make the project fly. What do you see as a reasonable price for the project to get going and make a decent return for the company?
Look, I think, yeah, there's a couple of smaller, you know, iron ore projects, you know, within our region. So we don't know what our CapEx and OpEx is going to be currently. That's where why we're going out for tenders, getting hard-numbered contracts. So, you know, the costs will all fall out of that. But I think CapEx would be circa 12, 15 million. That's sort of like the feeling, you know, I'll get. But the OpEx-wise, I don't think it'll be too much different from, you know, the junior companies currently putting out iron ore. Currently, so I think, yeah, certainly with the current iron ore prices, really a decent margin. But as we all always know, they're not going to stay that high forever. But certainly we'll be looking at, you know, trying to minimise our costs so we can stay in operation when the prices do ultimately drop. But yeah, let's just hope they're a little bit higher for a lot longer. So, you know, with the amount of stimulus happening in the world, I'd like to think so, but let's see.
One of the big difference in OpEx costs for you guys will be the rail, I guess. Most of the small ones are trucking some 400 or 500 kilometres.
Yeah, so our plans are there'll be about just over 200 kilometre road haul, and then, yeah, looking at about 400-450 rail haul. That is our current planning and strategy. So, yeah, so, I mean, obviously, yeah, the longer the haul, you know, the more trucks you need, the more drivers you need, and things like that. So, yeah, pretty keen to get onto that rail.
Okay. Now, the big one, Mount Ida, 1.85 billion tonnes of magnetite. I presume it's roughly 30% Fe, is it?
It's about 25%. So it can be upgraded to 68% and about 2.3 tonnes. We'll upgrade it to that. Yeah, so that's a huge project. So, and we're all aware of magnetite stories, past history. So Western Australia is well versed in magnetite projects, but we don't want to go too big on that. As I said, our immediate focus is a DSO project, but certainly we'll be looking at Mount Ida, being the large resource it is. But look at a smaller production profile on that project. You know, probably get it, you know, 3 to 4 million tonnes of concentrate range. You know, we certainly like what FMG's doing up with Iron Bridge. You know, that's got a modified flow sheet. It's less capital intensive, less operating costs. So we'll certainly be sort of watching how those guys go on that flow sheet. But as I said, you know, I think we'll look at modest start on Mount Ida. That'll be the intent, you know, 3 to 4 million tonnes of concentrate, something that'll be manageable in a capital sense. For a smaller company.
With the Pilbara, you know, mining near enough to a billion tonnes a year, I was just wondering the need for magnetite structurally over time. Is that a happening story? Or
yeah, I certainly think it is. It's entering into the, you know, green steel argument. Magnetite certainly has got its advantages. It's obviously a higher grade. You know, in the smelting process, it's an exothermic process, so don't need as much energy to smelt it. And then, of course, there's less slag generation that it has to be disposed of. So, magnetite, you know, the higher grades will certainly be sought after products, you know, in the future.
What's the potential end product rate? 65, is it? Or?
the grade of our magnetite. Well, the test work that we did all those years ago was putting a 68% iron product. But you know, that's in the ideal world. But I'd expect around the 66-67% iron grade in the real world. Yeah.
First up, you're obviously going to be pretty busy getting Mount Mason to the starting stores. How do you see Mount Ida emerging over time?
So we'll look at doing a lot more metallurgical test work. We've got existing drill core out at site, so that's all been stored in our core shed. look at a revised flow sheet. But we'll only really start looking at that in probably in 18 months' time, looking at that. Start working on that, maybe earlier. We'll just see how the market goes, but certainly our immediate focus is getting this DSO project off the ground with minimal distractions.
And that will make the group more than self-funding and give you money to do the extra work on getting Mount Ida ready to go.
We make a decent cash margin. We may even bring that forward earlier. So put a little dedicated team on that to look at that. So running in parallel, but certainly not within the first year after listing. So,
Now, what's your view on the iron ore market? Where do you see it going from here?
I wish I knew, Barry.
Just take a while it lasts.
Look, I think it all, I'm by no means an iron ore expert in forecasting prices, but look, the amount of stimulus that's going on in the world, I don't expect to see at this level for a very long time, but I still see, probably around the 150 mark, for quite, probably 2 to 3 years, I'd expect. So that's just my positive outlook on it. So, and yeah, if it is around those prices, we'll do very well.
Yeah. Okay. Now you'll have at the issue price, you'll have a fairly decent market cap when you compare it to some of the smaller ones out there. I just wonder what the market cap will be on debut. But I was just wondering, do you see yourself at all as a facilitator of M&A in that iron ore space? Is there a need for a company like Juno to take the lead and maybe amalgamate some of these smaller projects to get some scale about it?
Yeah, we'll see how the market turns out, but certainly we're pretty ambitious in what we do. We'd like to obviously get other DSO projects under our umbrella and get them into production. We do have a strong board, so Priyank Thapliyal, the CEO of Jupiter, is our chairman, and of course, we've got good representation on the board. POSCO and AMCI are major shareholders, and they have representation with Mr. Lee and Patrick Murphy, who's a managing director of AMCI, and of course, Knitson Bintley, who's a major shareholder in Jupiter, more recently so, major supporting shareholders. So, we've got really, really strong support for Juno, so we see a good future moving forward for sure.
Yeah, it's not the average share register for a $50 million company, is it?
No, it's not. So, on the the IPO in specie distribution shares that all the Jupiter shareholders received in Juno shares, with those three companies, that's 50% of those register, so of the distribution shares. So we look forward to those support, the major shareholder support going forward. So
I'll just mention to listeners that at the time of talking, I wasn't aware of what your ASX code would be. Do you know what it is yet?
Yes, it's JNO. Nice and easy. Yeah.
That's true. Alrighty, Greg. Well, great story. Great to see another iron ore investment alternative emerge on the ASX, particularly one with advanced projects like you've got, both the near term and the large-scale opportunity in magnetite, which will come into its own over time. So with that, I'm going to say thanks for your time today and look forward to watching the company's progress in years to come. Cheers, mate.
Thanks very much, Barry.